The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
I'm back from vacation. Bitcoin and cyber currencies crash while I'm gone. U.S. markets back to the highs. World markets continue to rise and gold hits support and bounces. All this and much more on episode number 517 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello, and thanks for joining me. Andrew Horowitz here. You're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast, and we did have a week off last week as I was busy traveling throughout Europe, in particular the Mediterranean. Went on a cruise throughout the Mediterranean through Greece and Croatia, Slovenia, Italy. Quick stop in Vienna to start the trip, actually. Wonderful. Just if you haven't been there, I got to tell you, some awesome places to visit. In Greece, I went to, Mykonos, and went to Santorini, Athens, in Slovenia. I hit a couple of small towns there that were really nice. And in Croatia, Dubrovnik, and just had a great time. If you had the opportunity to follow me along on Twitter, I had a little game I was playing called Where Am I Today? Put up some pictures of some landmarks and places that I was during the trip. And I asked all my Twitter followers to guess where I was that day. And a lot of people participated in that. It was a lot of fun. You can follow me, of course, on Twitter. Andrew Horowitz is the handle, just one word. And I thought I'd just spend a couple of minutes at the top of the show talking about some of the more interesting things that I noticed and did on this particular trip. It was a great boat I was on. I was on the Azamara Quest, about 600 people on this ship. And I was able to get into some of the smaller ports in Europe. That was really nice. What was really cool about this ship was we would get to the actual port very early each day, and then we would leave very late. So it would give you a great opportunity to spend some time doing some tours or spending time in the various towns around the port. And went on a bunch of food and wine tours. Pretty much every single port had some great wine. Santorini was incredibly impressed with the wines, the white wines in particular. The red wines were terrible, but the white wines in Santorini, especially because there's like no water there. The ground is, when you look at the ground where the grapes grow, usually you would see very nice, foundation for the vines to grow in, but there was just rubble. It was volcanic. It was sulfur. It was ugly ground. And they have a really unique way of growing their grapes there. And they've done a tremendous job at, I would say, close to perfecting a couple of really good hardy grapes that grow in those conditions and produce a wonderful white wine and some other types of wines, like something between a port and a sherry that they make there also with the white wines. Great, great wines. Just a wonderful time there. In Croatia, food was amazing. I will say the highlight was the prosciutto in Croatia. Far better than I had ever before. Far better than the Italian prosciutto, as it was a bit saltier, and the taste was so much more intense the way they prepare it in Croatia. Spent some time there in Dubrovnik, where they of course tape the Game of Thrones. So we walked through the various areas where they're doing the Game of Thrones and where they've done the series there. That was kind of neat. Slovenia was nice, smaller. Awesome architecture, just beautiful. If you had the opportunity to go there, I would very much encourage you to hit some of these countries, especially Croatia. I think it's one of the up-and-coming places in Europe right now that a lot of people, I think, still don't know about here in the U.S. It's all the rage in Europe. And the ship was nice, too. Like I said, about 600 passengers, just the right size for this kind of trip. And I even made some money in the casino even though the casino was really small. The one thing that was a takeaway that was the, oh, what is going on here kind of moment in Venice, the taxis. Oh my goodness. They are expensive. Ridiculous. I mean, we went for maybe a 15 minute taxi ride. It was like 60 euros. The gondolas, if you want to take one of those rides, first of all, it's totally commercialized now. But if you want to take a ride on one of the gondolas, it's like 80 euros for a semi-private tour on a gondola. And getting in and out of Venice, if you're not, we didn't stay on the, you know, the main area of Venice, just right outside. You got to take a boat, you got to take a taxi, you got to take a train. I mean, it's like an hour and a half to get in or out in a pretty, I would say, a short distance. And the cost of it's probably, I think we calculated it was to get in and out, it was like $150 just to get in and out of Venice for the day. It was well worth it to spend the day in Venice because it's just a beautiful city. Well, let's talk about some of the things that have gone on in the market since I've been gone. We saw that, well, gold had been getting crushed. Actually hit an important level of support that I was looking at for some time. It hit 1,200, which we saw multiple times hit that bottom level. The setup seemed to be really good for gold and for the gold miners. If you look at GDX, we were looking to enter into a swing trade as gold was coming down for a bounce off that bottom. Now, if you look at the metals chart of gold, you'll see that there was some support about, again, 1,200 to 1,203 was a level. And it hit that. And at the same time, the gold miners hit that level. And if you look at the chart on the gold miners, we did see lower highs recently, and the lows appear to be possibly in at this point. So if you have any desire to get into a gold swing trade, that could be something that is interesting to look at. We have to see it hold these levels right about here and then the opportunity for it to bounce off of that and to see a nice return from there. I mean, the gold miners went from about $24 a share, the GDX ETF, to about $21 recently. And it has this stair-step look on the chart, on the daily chart, that is moving lower. But still, again, each time it seems to hit these levels, about the $21 level or so, on the GDX, there looks like there's an opportunity that there's some support, buyers step in, and there's an opportunity to make some money. So take a look at that and see where we are. If we get a little bit through where these levels we are right now, there could be a nice move to the upside, a short squeeze. And if gold can hold on as well, it'd be really cool. Now, what's interesting about this, though, at the same time, the US dollar is making new lows. Now, oftentimes, gold will move the opposite direction of the US dollar. As the US dollar moves down, gold will start to move up. However, this has not really been the case. The US dollar has been moving down over the last several months, and we hit a low that we've seen since, I guess, November of last year, but yet gold is not performing well. Now, even with, and we'll talk about this in a moment, but what's going on with the Fed and the dovish conversations they've been having and the fact that we've seen some of the economics come in a bit mixed, but inflation, again, we'll talk about this in a second, but inflation just not having any kind of uptick at all. And the Fed, even though they're talking about starting to reduce their balance sheet and continue on their rate hiking agenda, they still had a very dovish commentary in the recent discussions that we saw last week. That is a real wonder as to why gold hasn't been playing much better. But I would say that maybe some of the reason is because everybody wants to be in the markets. Rates are still low. You can borrow money cheaply to leverage up. Markets don't seem to want to stop no matter what the news is around the world. And why be in gold, I guess, at this point if there's not much risk? I mean, the VIX is down by 10 again. So without that risk in the markets and concern about what's going on and the potential for the markets to keep going higher, I think a lot of people are opting to say, you know what, the hell with this gold right now, even though it looks like it should be moving higher, it's just not. And therefore, the market should tell us what's going on, right? The trend is your friend. If gold isn't moving, even though all the things around it should, you know, should speak to the fact that, well, it should be moving higher. Well, let's just maybe get into what is moving well and not backing down under any circumstances. And even time, every time that the market moves down, it just bounces right back up anyway. So let's just get into the markets and we'll wait for gold another day. But I would keep an eye on these gold miners right now as an interesting place to possibly invest if we do see that there is a potential for maybe markets to slow down a little bit if it happens. But again, markets over the last couple of weeks have been slugging along and then hit a new high last week towards the end of the week. Now, on the other hand, Bitcoin and other cyber currencies not doing so well. As a matter of fact, I would say that they're crashing at this point. Over the weekend, Bitcoin hit 1835 low. Now, remember, it was a high of, what was it, about just over 2,900 back in June of this year. It's down 36%. Now, other cyber currencies are getting slammed as well. You look at Ethereum, down tremendously. You know, still, again, it's probably about the same, but 40% move over the last couple of weeks down. And people are asking, why is that? You know, what's going on? Well, I, as you know, my thoughts on this, whether I talk about it here on the Disciplined Investor podcast or on DH Unplugged, you know, Bitcoin was and has been going up because of a lack of liquidity and euphoria. There's emotional trade going on. People are getting a little crazy about this. And the same reason that it went up like it did, because there's lack of liquidity and there's a lot of money chasing this particular currency, quote unquote currency, is the reason why once they start selling, they really take it down pretty hard. So the question is it a buy point for Bitcoin? I got to tell you, it's hard to say. There's not a lot of history here, and you can use technicals all you want with this, but there's, again, this, it seems to be that with this particular instrument, that there's a lot of other things that are pushing and pulling the price, and it could be a lot of overseas action. And you know, who knows what's really going on with this particular instrument, whether it's Japan or China or a lot of Europe. You see a lot of the trades coming through Germany as an example. But one thing I'm going to tell you about this, and I'm going to stand by what I've said all along. We call it cyber currencies. This is not a currency. It's an investment. It's a tradable investment to an extent, a very volatile investment. But to say it's a currency you want to have some stability with. You don't get a 10% or 20% move on a currency in a daily basis unless something really is messed up. And Bitcoin and the various other cyber currencies do that on a regular basis. The way they move is not, you know, it's not something you want to hold per se as an alternative to the dollar or the euro or the yen as a safe place to have your money. It's not something you want to have necessarily as a backing of your other assets because it moves violently. And due to the fact that it has such volatility, I can't really say with good conscience that it is a currency. It doesn't have the fundamentals of a currency. So if you want to look at it as an investment, okay, great. That's fine. But I think that we have to realize that at this point, until things calm down and there's a little bit more stability in the underlying instrument, that this is just not, I just can't call it a currency. Now, by the way, if you want to check out the pricing of Bitcoin, there's a cool site out there. It's called bitcointicker.co. Bitcointicker.co. It's kind of a good price to check a good site to check the prices and the chart action of what's going on with Bitcoin, if you want to see that. But I know a lot of people out there are very, you know, we talked about two things. I talked about gold and I talked about Bitcoin in the same conversation within minutes of each other. And probably there's a lot of people out there that are very much Bitcoin followers and gold bugs, and you get crazy when I talk about this stuff. But, you know, it is something that is, I think, important because we are seeing a lot of movement in these. And you have to realize that you can't fall in love with any investment. You know, you love the investment as long as it loves you. That's the way that I think, you know, from a disciplined standpoint of investing, you have to play it. So just be aware that there is that volatility there with Bitcoin. And if you want to trade it, fine, but realize that it can see substantial moves like it did. Don't forget, Bitcoin also trades 24/7. It doesn't have breaks. So it trades over the weekend, trades at night, trades early morning, no breaks. Now, I also want to give you an update on a few positions that we have been discussing recently, and one in particular. Something I think I've been talking about since the IPO, pretty much on a regular basis. I've been tweeting about it, talked about it on DH Unplugged a lot, and just want to give you a quick update, and that's Snap. Now, Snap holding for clients in the TDI managed growth strategy were short the position. And now on this trade, this is, I think, the second time we're in this trade, but we're on this particular trade, I believe we're in the money by about close to 25% at this point. And it recently, just last week, it broke that $17 threshold that was the IPO price, where the price came out and it shot up, if you recall, up to about 29. It backed off a little bit, came back. And then when it finally broke the 17, it went down to like 15, I think it's at 15 and a quarter right now. And the big question is, where does it go from here? So from my research and from what we've looked at in terms of this particular name, it would appear that there's really a potential for a lot more downside. We're going to be looking for a hold of the $15 level to potentially take some profits on this particular trade. But, and again, this is a swing trade where we're looking for, you know, maybe a few weeks or a few months in this trade and see if we can hit some levels of support. Now, we're below any level of technical significance that you can even track or you can actually look at. It's about down close to 50%, about 45% from its high. So it did retrace a lot of those gains that it had. But yet, at the same time, we wonder, what is the longer-term profitability of this company? And I've been questioning this for a long time, wondering, how is this company going to actually make money long-term? Remember, it's only a mobile-based application. Yes, they have advertisers and there's a lot of users, but it's still very small compared to Facebook and Twitter and all the other, you know, WhatsApp and all the other various similar style of messaging and picture services like Instagram. And there's a lot of companies out there that are doing the same thing. We know that Facebook a few weeks ago came out with a similar product right on the Facebook app where you can do filters and pictures and all that good stuff. The barrier to entry into this kind of messaging is very low, easily copyable. And we look at this, and there was a lot of excitement when it first came out because everybody was using it. Their users are down. Remember something. This was, I think, really the tell. When they came out with their first earnings report as a publicly traded company, it was pretty awful. You don't see that often. Usually a company that comes public, their first earnings report is pretty spectacular. And then they start slowing down as the excitement wears off. But they came out with a pretty ugly first report, and that was a sign. That was telling us something. The question is, how are they going to hold on to advertisers? How are the advertisers going to want to have a... how are they going to want to have a base that their messages disappear very quickly, that there's really no stickiness like a web page that if you could search it. Remember something, you can't have the very nature of this product is that the things disappear after you see them first time. You can't retrieve them. So therefore, where is the advertising money coming from on a longer term basis? Will they come up with another model somehow to create a better advertising base? Possibly. But I think the advertisers got in there because they were excited about this new product. They weren't sure what it could do. They saw that the users were building very quickly in the beginning, but they're starting to realize, well, where do we really get the benefit here? I mean, if you want to look at a similar application style to this, I mean, Twitter is a much better play if you think about it. So we're going to look at this as a potentially more downside. We're going to look at the $15 level and see if it can hold that. And if it bounces from the $15 level, possibly we'll look to take some of the profits on our short position here. But I still don't have a great feeling. It could be a sub $10 company in the near future. Now, recently I also mentioned some names post the Amazon and Whole Foods announcement. If you remember this and recall what we had been talking about, we looked at names like Target and Kroger, and there's a few other names in the grocery business that were just obliterated when the news came out. I mean, down 15, 20% on that. Kroger was getting killed, Target, Walmart. I mean, the whole list of competitors got slammed on this. And there's been some news that maybe Walmart will put a bid in for Whole Foods. I don't know if that's going to work. The Amazon Whole Foods thing seems kind of brilliant to me. It seems like it's going to be a real winner. And with the abilities that we know already that Amazon has, this could be revolutionary in terms of this market. Now, once these names were obliterated, there was a buying opportunity that we saw. And we actually bought them again for clients in the TDI Managed Growth Strategy and saw that this was a great opportunity to get into some of these that were probably overdone dramatically, that many of these companies will pop back a little bit, and they have been so far. And by the way, you can see, just as a note, you can see the information on how we actually develop and structure the TDI Managed Growth Strategy that you can invest in over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There's a video and a virtual tour there, so you can see some of the things that are going on there. But I think that what's really interesting on this is that while they haven't really recovered a lot, I mean, maybe 5 to 10% from the lows, which is a nice trade so far, I have to wonder what they're going to do to combat this combination of the Amazon Whole Foods and what is going to come out of this, how it's going to play out, how long it's going to take to get done, what this is going to mean to the grocery business, delivery business, and how much they're really going to affect many of these companies. But I still think that some of these companies like a Kroger and Target in particular are names that you could probably buy off these lows and be surprised in a couple of years from now, if not a shorter period of time, that they held up pretty well. As a matter of fact, Target came out with their numbers last week and they surprised to the upside and things weren't as bad as a lot of people had anticipated. And the stock got some legs on that. All right, let's talk about some interesting, I think, at least I think there's some interesting economic information and what's going on right here over the last couple of weeks. I think obviously the biggest news was that the Department of Labor on the first Friday of the month, a couple of weeks back, came out with their official numbers on the job situation. And we saw creation of about 225,000 new jobs in June, which was the best hiring, actually, in about 4 months. About 4.7 million people actually re-entered the labor force and found work in June, which was at a level that hadn't been seen in the last 27 years. Wages rose about 0.2% for the month, which is annualized at about 2.5%. The unemployment rate was 4.4%. That was good. And we also saw the underemployed, or the U6 number, increase slightly to about 8.6, which is the first move higher since January. The other things that were interesting, I thought, was the ISM factory number. It hit a three-year high. It moved up 2.9 points to 57.8 in June, the highest reading since August of, I think it was way back to 2014. The non-manufacturing, or the service numbers, gained also, got up to 57.4, which is the 90th straight month of expansion for the service sector. 90 months of expansion. That's a long time without a hiccup, without a move below 50. Of course, that 50 is the line between expansion and contraction. That's good. So the economy is moving along. Not much change over the last few months, but that's good. Still seeing growth generally, even though the GDP number came in, you know, it's below 2% or right around there. But what's really interesting is we're not seeing a lot of wage growth with all this. We know that. We've seen that. It's just not happening. We know that we're not seeing inflation. Inflation is just stuck, not going anywhere. And that's driving a lot of people crazy, wondering what the hell's going on. I mean, it's getting people nuts. They don't understand. How is it that we have job growth? We have unemployment at a multi-decade low. We're not seeing the wage growth happen. We're not seeing inflation happen. Like, what is the story here? Are the statistics lying somehow? I don't think so. But it's just it's simply a calculation of what's going on. And there's an aberration due to the fact that there is such low interest rates out there, and it's warping all these numbers, creating an anomaly of sorts in what's going on. So what's happening is that we're seeing that that there's money available to hire people. Commodity prices are not going anywhere, staying really low. People are not spending. We know that. However, they're not spending more, but they're still spending. They're not increasing their spending. They're increasing their savings, and possibly because markets are doing well, they're just putting more money in there. And they're desiring to plan for their futures because they realize, well, there's not a lot that I have towards retirement in general, and I'm going to start saving at this point. So there's these aberrations that are forming in the economics that are not matching, by the way, what's happening in the markets, hitting, you know, new highs. Earnings are doing well. If you saw some of the bank earnings season started last week on Friday, and we saw that JP Morgan's numbers came out, they blew them away. Thursday or Friday. Their numbers were really good. However, at the same time, even though we're seeing earnings really good overall, we're seeing that there is a good amount of jobs growth. GDP is not ticking higher. And in a way, that's good because everybody's thinking, well, the Fed's going to stand pat. At least they're going to keep interest rates low for a long time. And that was confirmed when Janet Yellen was in the hot seat testifying before both houses of Congress, both the Senate and the House of Representatives last week. Yeah, she took some grilling. If you watched it, I watched part of it. She took a little bit of a beating from some of the Republicans, of course. And, you know, even the Democrats were giving her credit for all this wonderful things that are going on. And the Republicans came back and said, no. It really wasn't the Fed. We elected a new president. Let's give him credit. And, you know, this whole political banter that was going on in these hearings. But if you kind of strip all of that out and you listen to what she was saying, she is as dovish as ever. While she's looking and the entire Fed is looking to reduce the balance sheet over time, it's going to take years and years, possibly close to, I would say, you know, 8 to 10 years at least, to reduce down their balance sheet. And to normalize rates, they're talking about they're close to what's the quote-unquote normalized rate for the Fed funds rate, not too far away from it where it is now, maybe another 0.5%, maybe 1% higher. Now, I don't know how you actually get to that because, again, if you look at all the different economics that are out there and the earnings that are happening and the jobs creation, the housing numbers, if you just look across the board at all of this, you have to wonder how in the world are they thinking we're at a very close to a normalized rate? But the markets liked it. There's no question about that. Markets are saying, hey, you know what? We believe that the Fed is going to pretty much stay on an extremely ultra slow course of rate hikes. And that being the case, it's going to be really good for companies that are looking to do share buybacks and lend out money through, issuing new fixed income and debt. And the game just continues on, no different than it's done for some time. And by slowly raising rates, it's really not affecting anything. And you can see it hasn't really slowed down the economy, job creation. And, you know, it's not really curtailing inflation because there is no inflation to begin with at the upper levels. It's staying where it is. Nothing's moving. So as everything stays the same, and even though we've had several rate hikes already, all systems go. Green light to invest. And even with the rate hikes, you have to really step back and look at what is the rate. Well, it's, you know, 1% or so. That's not a lot. So borrowing money is still very cheap. Not as cheap as it was, but it's still pretty cheap. Now, also in when it comes to the government last week, we saw that the Senate will not be taking a break, at least for 2 weeks, until they get this health care bill done. Now, if you want to put a light under a senator's butt to get something done, you take away his free time. You take away her time to vacation. You say, you know what? You need to be in Washington, even though you're supposed to have a recess here. We're putting it off until you can come together and pass this bill. And I got to tell you, I really think that's going to work. I do. I think that is going to do the trick. It's going to get some of those senators that were on the sideline saying, oh, you know what? We'll deal with it later. We'll figure out how I can put what I want into this bill. And even though it's not a really good bill by anybody's standards, you know what? Let's just pass this thing already. I want to get my free time on the beach. I want to play golf. I want to go and spend some time with the family and get back to my constituents. I think it's going to work. I think this is a very smart move to get the senators to stay there and to sway their vote to get this thing done. Even if it's not a good plan, even if it's not beneficial to Medicaid and also about, I don't know, 15 million people who possibly are going to lose their health care. It seems to me that just any plan, just something, getting that passed will be a major victory. And then markets will be all happy. Because once you get through that, they can move on to the whole tax issue. Tax reform, tax cuts. So where do we go here from here, right? So there's still a few votes needed to get to that 50 mark in the Senate to pass this health care. But I got to tell you, from what I'm seeing, it seems like much more likely that we'll see a vote come up very quickly, and there's a much higher probability that we'll get something passed here. And then markets are going to be happy due to the fact that it's going to be an easier lift on the tax plan. We'll get something through, finally done. Nothing hanging over our heads, even though it's not a good plan per se, the best plan ever that was promised. But it's going to be happy. The markets will be happy that, well, something is going to get done at least. At least we'll have that done, and that's going to be good. So I think that's the game plan for the next week that we're going to see. Now, earnings, like I said, bank earnings first. We'll see some of the tech in a couple of weeks. That's going to be important. Technology clearly has been volatile over the last month and a half. And you have to wonder where there's going to be a question as to how the earnings are going to come out. We did see some incredible earnings from the Microsofts and Apples of the world. Well, Apple wasn't so great, but still holding up. Google. But a lot of these names that got, you know, a little bit questioned in their last earnings as to whether or not they're going to be able to continue on with the same levels of what they've seen before and the trend that we've been seeing that has been very positive for technologies, clearly leading the markets overall, or had been leading the markets overall. You have to wonder whether or not they're going to be able to continue with this incredible growth that we've seen over the last year. And I think there's some question as to that. And maybe, just maybe, what we're seeing now and the volatility in the technology space is simply people taking some money off the table, saying that, you know, we've seen a great run here, in particular in 2017, and maybe it's time to just take a little bit off the table right here and wait till earnings come out and then maybe either redeploy or reassess what's going on with the earnings landscape in terms of markets. So I think there's going to be an interesting revelation over the next few weeks to really solidify whether or not that is going to be something that is a much brighter opportunity into the future, or if they hit their peak earnings recently in terms of technology. But again, nothing. I don't think anything really to worry about too much, because we're still seeing that these companies are innovating, coming up with just incredible amount of, you know, this whole AI. And we talked about this with John Markman recently, all the things that are happening with autonomous driving and artificial intelligence and robotics, and how it's making a lot of things much easier for people in life, and how it's making for the profitability of these companies to see a much brighter future in the near term and in the longer term too, for that matter. So I don't think anything's going to really spook investors too much, but we'll have to see how that's going to play out in the near term over the next week. Let's see what else I have here. We talked about the gold. We talked about ISM. Let's see here. We talked about world markets continuing to rise. And of course, the continuation of the ECB working on a very, talking on one side, saying that they're going to possibly slow down their stimulus. On the other side, you know, giving more money to Greece. So I don't really think a lot's going to change there either. It seems to me that right now we're in a holding pattern in terms of everything that's going on. The big determinant of all this is going to be if and when one day there's the realization of how much debt is owned. We did see that bonds spiked in the last couple of weeks in Europe after some of the commentary and some of the economics that came out. And who knows if we do hit a threshold that becomes very concerning for some of these areas. If there's going to be investors worrying, wondering, you know, is this something really we are comfortable with? The amount of debt that is owned by the central banks. Talked about this with Ben Hunt and a few other guests recently, and how this is just not sustainable. The ability for the central banks to have this much debt on their books, and to you know, what's going to happen if there is ever a slowdown, or how are they going to add more stimulus, is just real big question. So anyway. We're going to have a short show this week because I got to tell you, I'm exhausted. Just back, and I just want to get right in the office. I'm still on European time, so we're going to end it there. We have some great guests coming up in the next few weeks, though, I promise you. I know I was off last week as well, but starting next week, we're going to pound it hard. We're going to have some great guests. Check out thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Also, please check out the Aero Strategy, which has been doing really well to hold on to the trend these days. It's an algorithmic strategy that we designed. Either you're short, long, or neutral of the markets through the S&P 500 ETF. And you can take a look at all of that on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. So we're going to end it there. Thanks again. I just want to make sure we did get a show in this week because I did have that one lapse last week as I was vacationing. But other than that, there's really not a lot happening right now in between some of these economics and the earnings season, but it's starting to pick up, and we're going to have a lot to talk about over the next few weeks. I got to tell you that. Also, listen to DH Unplugged each and every week, myself and John C. Dvorak. We talk about all things related to markets in an offbeat way. Try to come up with some very interesting and alternative ways to look at really what's going on out there in terms of business and finance. So make sure to listen to that each and every Tuesday when we live stream at 9 p.m. each Tuesday night. You go over to DH Unplugged to get in on that and the chat as well. Otherwise, well, thanks for joining me. Short show, like I said, but we'll see you again next week. All right. Arrivederci.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.